So this is a nice annual festival season. Appearance day. And then fasting for, you know, the other things in between. So besides the austerity of fasting, there's of course the reason for the fasting. And that's, these are auspicious days. The appearance of Lord Balaram precedes the appearance of Lord Krishna, and the next day is the appearance of our founder Acharya, and shortly thereafter is Radharani's appearance day, and in between is Julan Yatra, and it's a wonderful period of festivals. Here's a little detail about Balaram's appearance that Jiva Goswami describes. It's a detail. It's in Gopalchampu. Gopalchampu. He says that even the title sounds nice, Gopalchampu. It's little cameo pictures of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And of course, one of his pastimes is his appearance. And before Krishna's appearance comes Balaram's appearance. So he describes like this. At the time of the name-giving ceremony, who gave the names of Krishna and Balaram? Gargamuni. Gargamuni was the... In the Yadu dynasty, he was the... like super astrologer. Everyone knew Gargamuni's the best. And so in the Yadu dynasty, they went to Gargamuni. And in the lineage of kings of the Yadu dynasty, one of the sons was Parjanya Maharaj. And he was, of the lineage in the Yadu dynasty, he was of the Yadu dynasty, but his father had married a Vaishya woman, and Nanda Maharaj, Parjanya Maharaj became king of the Vaishya community. And he had a number of sons. Upananda was the oldest, and Nanda was his younger brother, and there were some other younger brothers, Nanda, Upananda, this Nanda, that Nanda. They all had a Nanda phrase in there. So when Upananda was crowned the king of the cowherds, the very same ceremony, he entrusted the crown and the throne to Nanda Maharaj, because although he's my younger brother, he's the best. And everyone knew it, and accepting the wishes of his elder brother, Nanda Maharaj became the king of the cowherds. So when it was time for the name-giving ceremony of Krishna and Balaram, Jiva Goswami writes, they were both crawling. So he then asks the question, was he a year and 3 months old? Or was he newborn? Because those of you that are parents, when a child is a year and 3 months and a year and 4 months, are they crawling or are they walking? Walking. But both Krishna and Balaram were crawling. Aha! So then he goes, taking that fact, he explains that one of the wives, when Vasudev was married, it's not not only Vasudev married Devaki, but there are a number of sisters who he simultaneously married. One of them was Devaki, was one of the wives of Vasudev. So when Vasudev was imprisoned with Devaki, because it was her child, not Vasudev, nor her, but her child that was prophesied to kill Kamsa. He imprisoned them both. But apparently he was allowed to spend time with his wives. And Devaki became pregnant. And in the third month of her pregnancy, Vasudeva advised Devaki to go to his dear friend and relative, Nanda Maharaj, and stay there. Let the child be born there, and you'll be safe, and the child will be safe and cared for even while I'm in prison. That was in her third month of pregnancy. Sometime later, Devaki became pregnant with her seventh pregnancy, because the first six children were killed by Kamsa after they were born. And the seventh child, during the seventh pregnancy, this was when Krishna called Yogamaya and gave her some service of take the child in the womb of Devaki and transfer the child to the womb of Rohini. And that was in the seventh month of Rohini's pregnancy. So you listen carefully, because it's a little, it's delicate. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So you've heard the description that when Krishna was taken from the prison house of Kamsa, read carefully in the addendum to the end of the third chapter when Krishna is born, Canto 10, Chapter 3, it's described there by our acharyas, Prabhupada quotes. When Krishna was taken from the four-armed form of Krishna, Vasudeva Krishna, was taken on the other side of the river Jamuna to Gokul, there was not only one child, a female child, but there were two children. The firstborn of those two children was Krishna. He, in fact, according to our acharyas, was the child of Yashoda. We sometimes refer to Krishna as the foster child. But, you know, that's the Swayam Bhagavan Krishna who never leaves Vrindavan, that one. And the second child was Yogamaya. It's described, after her first birth, it was such an event for Yashoda that she was not even aware that she had a second child. I don't know how that could be for a mother that has twins. She doesn't even know she has a second child. But that's what's described, or by Yogamaya's influence. And she was fast asleep. So when Vasudeva brought his child by the side of Mother Yashoda, the Vasudeva Krishna merged with Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, because Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is the source of everything, including Vasudeva Krishna and everything else. You with me? And then the female child is the child that he brought back and gave to Devaki, and Kamsa tried to kill and couldn't kill because that's Yogamaya. You can't kill Yogamaya. And then she transformed herself into her external feature, Durga, and hideously laughed at Vasudeva, you are such a fool, and said the rest of what she said. So as Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, there's a little more detail, but as Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, Balaram never leaves Vrindavan. The original Balaram, as there's the original Krishna, never leaves Vrindavan. So when the seventh child of Devaki was transferred to the womb of Rohini, Rohini was already pregnant, and that expansion of Balaram in Mathura merged with the original Balaram who was within the womb of Rohini. And he stayed within, according to Jiva Goswami, he, Balaram, stayed within the womb of Rohini for 14 months. That's a long time, poor mother. But, you know, Shukadeva Goswami stayed in the womb for 16 years, so I guess 14 months can handle it. And that he was born just a short time before Krishna was born. Like we're observing Balaram's appearance day. And then shortly we're going to be observing Krishna Janmashtami. According to Jiva Goswami, they were shortly born, one before the other. And so, of age, Balaram was elder, but not by much. He recognizes, there are other versions of this, or other views, but he goes back to this statement that when Gargamuni was performing the name-giving ceremony, they were both crawling. So they're near the same age, not a year and a half apart, or a year and 4 months apart. So these two, I mean, this is a discussion we can have with devotees. And to have a discussion like this with someone that's not a devotee, it's a little tough. Like, you know, Krishna, I had a discussion with somebody who's kind of new. And like, as of like 2 months ago, he started 16 rounds. But before that, he was, in his words, a Hindu. So, you know, meaning everyone, everything. That was his life, and that was his, how he was raised, and his mother and father, and that's how they view things, and that's what he grew up in. So he was asking me today, this morning, I understand from Krishna consciousness that Krishna is the source of all the devatas. But what's the source of Krishna? And it wasn't a doubting question, it was just he wanted some clarity, and I explained. And he wrote to me since I got here today, a very nice explanation. It's, one may ask the question, what is the source of Krishna? But the answer you gave was, Krishna is the source of anything. Excuse me, Krishna is the source of everything, and there is no source of Krishna. He's the absolute truth. His nature is. The identity of Krishna is. The whole of Vedanta is searching for that from which everything comes, and Krishna is that from which everything comes. And to ask, where, very, very nice, where does Krishna come from? It's a rhetorical question. Because by definition, Krishna is the source of everything. He has no source. Anadir, adir, govinda, sarvakarana, karana. Anadir, adir, govinda. He has no beginning, and he is the beginning of everything that has a beginning. And even that which doesn't have a beginning, like Balaram, he is the source of Balaram also. He's the, as the word is used in Bhagavad Gita, pratishta. As Brahman is not created either. Brahman is sat. Brahman doesn't sometime come into being. For first there was Krishna, some time passed, and Krishna thought, gee, I better have some effulgence. So then he expanded the Brahmajyoti. It's not like that. Brahman is sat. As Krishna is Sat-Chit-Ananda, Vigraha. Krishna is the Pratishta of Brahman. And he says that in the last verse of chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita. Brahmano, hi, Pratishta, aham. So what does Pratishta mean? Like when we perform a deity installation. That's what the ceremony is called. The pratishta. The installing of the deity. Yes? So what does pratishta mean? Installing the deity. Pratishta means basis and support. Like the computer is resting on the chair, and the chair is resting on the legs, and the legs are resting on the sheet, and the sheet's resting on the rug, and the rug's resting on the floor, and the floor is resting on the foundation. The foundation is resting on the earth, and the earth is resting on Krishna, or Krishna's energies. As he says in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the prakriti is resting on him, And Brahman is resting on him. In fact, everything is resting on him. He is the partition of everything. Are you like Sarva Karana Karanam? As he's the cause of all causes, he's the pratishtha of all pratishthas. Whatever else is supporting something, ultimately he's the support of all those somethings. Just like, I'm going a little way over here, but I remember hearing about the churning of the ocean of milk. You know, the Leela. The competition between the devas and the asuras, the suras and the asuras. And they were defeated, the suras were defeated, they went to Lord Vishnu what to do. He suggested, cooperate with them and make the arrangement for the churning of the milk ocean. So the asuras thought, no problem, we'll get their help and then we'll take advantage of whatever is produced from their help. They're very calculating. And so the Mundra Mountain was placed in the ocean of milk. And they started churning, but the Mundra Mountain was crushing them. So, Lord Kurma came, and Lord Kurma rested the Mundra Mountain on his back, and he was like getting his back scratched, according to our Acharya's explanation. So I was, in reading that, I was thinking, what's Kurma resting on? Like there's an ocean of milk. Does the milk have the ocean have a bottom? And if there's a bottom, what's the bottom resting on? You know, my college brain asking those kinds of questions. But the light went on, and he doesn't need to rest on anything. Everything rests on him. Everything rests on him. He is the pratishtha of everything. Now, how do we know that? Well, from Shabda Pramana, that's how we know that. And otherwise, you can't know that. You can't figure it out. You can't, like, sense inspection. No way. Reason and logic, understand what Krishna says in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Very beginning, he's introducing the subject of the Absolute Truth, and he indicates a very clear logical statement. Whatever existed before we existed, nobody knows, because it existed before you existed. Very logical. What existed before you existed? You can't figure it out. You can inductively reason. Perhaps maybe it was like this. Or you can bluff and say it was like this. You know, that's what scientists do. Once upon a time, there was a singularity. Don't ask me where the singularity came from. Don't ask me why it exploded, but all of a sudden, kaboom, it exploded. And mass went flying all over space. Don't ask me where space came from, where the singularity came from, or why it exploded. It just existed. So you have to, it's something rests on something. So if it rests on a singularity, then the question is, where did the singularity come from? And then you could give it, well, anyway. You can't know. You can perhaps maybe guess. I was attending a Graduate Indian Student Association program. What is it called? GSA. GISA. Or IGSA, anyway, program somewhere in the University of Houston. And I was making a presentation on, we'll get back to Balaram in a minute. Making a presentation on mysteries of the sacred universe. Sariputta's work on analyzing the fifth canto and what the fifth canto says of cosmology. To Indian graduate students. And because the work that Sariputta has done is very scientific, they were all paying attention and they weren't like, oh, this is rubbish. they were finding it very interesting because it's empirically, you can there's numbers connected to the whole thing, and you can describe the whole thing quantitatively. In any case, at the end, one of the persons said, you know, this picture of everything comes from a person is very different than everything comes from a singularity. He said, mathematically, these theoretical mathematics have calculated down to milliseconds before the Big Bang, or after the Big Bang, what happened. But we can't get down to what happened at the time of the Big Bang. Math doesn't go there. I don't know what they were talking about, but that's what they were saying. And then another fellow raised his hand and said, yeah, and the mathematics take us to the point on the other end where at least theoretical mathematics says either one of two things happen. Because the forces of gravity become so stretched because mass is moving in such far dimensions, it just dissipates into nothingness. That's one mathematical notion. And the other is it then implodes back upon itself. It becomes a singularity again. And I have two comments. One is there's a Nobel Prize winning physicist, not the current one, but somebody who's expired from Harvard University, who said he likes the Vedas because he likes the picture of the Vedas where everything is cyclical. Forget his name, but if I heard it, I would recognize it. And so he likes the idea that of the two notions that implodes back upon itself. He likes that because it makes sense to him. So he likes the Vedas for that reason. And the other point is, I said, let's look at these two pictures, where the numbers of modern scientists are now more and more and more and more closely matching Vedic numbers. Of, you know, like, let's just take the distance between the Earth and the Sun. Once upon a time, in Vedic times, the picture of the cosmos was geocentric. Geocentric means the Earth is at the center and things are calculated as moving in relation to the Earth, geocentric. And along came Copernicus. And he said, no, it's heliocentric. And that became like, you know, not just in India, world picture, world view of cosmology got turned upside down. And then he also invented a telescope, and with the telescope he made a calculation of the distance between the Earth and the Sun. And it was whatever the number was. And then over a period of centuries, the number got closer, and as telescopes got better and better and better, the number got closer and closer and closer to the Vedic model of the distance between the Earth and the Sun. Now there is almost a one-to-one correlation. And so many other astronomical calculations. So I said, here's something for you Indian graduate students to think about. How did the Vedas know those numbers? It wasn't through technology. They didn't have Hubble telescopes mounted on spaceships that go zooming through space and take pictures and send the pictures back, and then they take measurements based upon those pictures, and then they can say all kinds of things. They didn't have technology. So how do they know the numbers? There was a source of wisdom beyond technology, or beyond senses and extending the senses. Source of wisdom, different. And that same source of wisdom, here's the second thing I'd like you to consider. Here's the picture that you have of the universe. It starts with nothing. Whether it implodes back upon itself or it goes into nothingness, either way, it starts with nothing, and the end is nothing. So where does that leave you in between? Nothing. That's one picture. Then the other picture where the numbers are the same and everything starts with a person. And it comes to rest in a person. And in between, we have a relationship with the Supreme Person. Now, that's a much warmer model than nothing and nothing, and in between is nothing. And the numbers work. And they've been working before technology was up and running. So, aside from faith, where you repose your faith, I like this model much better. Take your pick, which one you want. Keep going on with your graduate studies, but consider carefully which model. So, on the authority of, back to this young man I was speaking with this morning, on the authority of Scripture, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. And that same Govinda, who is the Adi Purusha, the original person, he has an eternal brother. And his name is Balaram. Or Baladev. Or Haladar. He has different names that identify as different names of Krishna. His activities and his relationships with others, particularly his relationship with others who are intimately connected with him in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan. That's where he resides. And as Krishna, yada yadahi dharma shaglanir, whenever there is discrepancy in dharma, Krishna descends, and when Krishna descends, Balaram comes with him. But it's an expansion of the original Balaram who comes. So here's another little detail. When Krishna was born in Vrindavan, in Mathura, how many arms did he have? Four. And the symbols of Vishnu in his four arms. And then, at the request of Devaki, he assumed a childlike form, but before he did so, he said, please take me to the other side of the river Jamuna. And don't worry, Nanda Maharaj, or Vasudev, the guards will fall asleep, the shackles will fall off our arms, and the locks in the door will fall off. And don't worry that it's raining. Ananta Shesh will cover us. And don't worry, it's the dead of night, and it's a stormy night, so all the clouds are in the sky. Don't worry, I'm effulgent. So you'll be able to cross the river, no problem. So he crossed the river. He didn't necessarily say all those things. I'm just embellishing a little bit. But. And he was carrying him across the river. And as he was carrying him across the river, you've seen many photographs or images of paintings of he's carrying Krishna. Did you know that Krishna slipped out of his hands and into the river? Now, those of you that are parents, and even those of us that aren't parents, imagine the first night of the child's birth, you're crossing a river and the child slips out of your hands into the river. How are you going to feel? Oh my God, yeah, right. And this is a pure devotee carrying the personality of Godhead, who he saw as the personality of Godhead with four arms, and he fell into the river. He's searching and searching and searching in the river, and then he finds a child. Subtext or commentary. Vasudev Krishna was being exchanged for Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. He who never leaves Vrindavan was now being carried by Krishna, by his father, Vasudev. And that's Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is what merged with the form of Krishna. Now we'll go 12 years later, and Akura comes to take Krishna to Mathura. Same thing happened in reverse. That is, Krishna and Balaram wanted to take their bath in the river Jamuna. Akura wanted to also take his bath. And he saw Krishna and Balaram in the river Jamuna, even though they were in the chariot. So he went back to the chariot. There they were in the chariot. It's like Lord Brahma, right? Seeing the calves and the cowherd boys. Krishna can expand however he likes. And so he went back to the river, and then he didn't see Krishna and Balaram. He saw the spiritual world. He saw Lord Vishnu and Anantashesh. Lord Vishnu reclining on Anantashesh. And he had the realization, this is the personality of Godhead. And he who is seated in the chariot is the personality of Godhead, the same personality of Godhead. Only Swayam Bhagavan Krishna was staying in Vrindavan, and Vasudeva Krishna was going with him to Mathura. Because Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. He performs Leela in Vrindavan, he performs Leela outside of Vrindavan. But Swayam Bhagavan Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. His little bonus subject. I've been preparing since January, very enthusiastically for a presentation on Sri Brahma Samhita that I'll be doing during the Thanksgiving weekend. 12-part, and I'm only going to do half of it because it's so substantial. And those beginning verses, they're very confusing. If you've ever picked up Sri Brahma Samhita and tried to read it, besides you need a dictionary for every third, fourth word, the subject matter itself is bewildering. But I'm going to unbewilder it for you just a little bit right now. Verses 3 through 5 describe a yantra. What's a yantra? Yantra rudhani mayaya. What is Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita? What's yantra? Machine. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the living entity is situated as if on a machine made of material nature. Prakriti is working like a machine. Like, you know, the automobile. You get in the automobile and turn it on and you're sitting still, but you're moving 60 miles an hour. Zoom, zoom, zoom. It's the machine that's moving 60 miles an hour and you're sitting still. But you're moving 60 miles an hour. Because the machine is moving 60 miles an hour. So the soul is similarly situated in this machine made of material nature, and we're doing all kinds of things. But as it's not a small matter, it's a small philosophical issue. It's a very important philosophical issue to detach ourselves from this sense of doership, because what's doing everything is material nature. And we're just going along for the ride on a machine. That's another time, another topic. Very nice subject. Very important subject. To get free from false ego. The sense of doership, you know, where I'm going to get it done. And then we get attached. It doesn't happen the way we plan it to go when we get frustrated. You know that one. It's due to false ego. And inspired by the mode of passion, we think wrongly. Anyway, transcendental consciousness is to understand where our position of detachment. And that comes by attachment to the Supreme. That's why so much discussion about Krishna and Balaram and worshipping them and chanting Hare Krishna and Hare Rama and doing the things that we do to connect with Krishna and detach from illusion. So the Bhagavatam, Sri Brahma Samhita describes another yantra in the form of a diagram, like a mystical diagram. It's called a yantra. And those of you who have been to Mayapur, how many have been to Mayapur? So when you look at the Nrisimha altar in Mayapur, there's Lord Nrisimhadev. Down over here is Prahlad Maharaj. And there's all kinds of Shilas just at the feet of Lord Nrisimhadev. And down to the left and the right, there's a brass plate that's about 9 inches by 9 inches or 10 inches by 10 inches. It's a yantra. And up close, there's an inscription in Sanskrit with different diagrammatical figures, kind of like a mandala. Mandala is a geometric pattern that's symmetrical. And inscribed on the yantra are words that indicate the position of the different abodes of the Supreme Lord and his associates in Vaikuntha, because Nrisingadeva resides there. But Krishna resides in Goloka, so there's a Goloka yantra, like the one that you see in the Nrisinga yantra. And here's what it looks like. He describes, if you remember the language, a hexagonal figure, that language, like, what's that? Here's what it is. It's in the center, so there's a like a flower has a corolla and has petals around the corolla. In the beginning, it describes, it depicts the yantra that I have an image of. There's eight, because there's eight principal gopis. So the petals are the abodes of the gopis. But later, in the same Sri Brahmaswami, it said tens of thousands of petals, because there's lots of gopis. Tens of thousands. And in the center part of the petals is the corolla. And in the center of the corolla is Radha and Krishna. In the bija syllable of the Gopal mantra, and then in a hexagonal figure, there's other terms written in Sanskrit that, when put them together, it makes the Gopal mantra, which I'm not going to repeat, but you can read it in Sri Brahma Samhita. And it takes the shape of a hexagon, because there's six lines of that mantra, along with the initial bija. So Radha and Krishna in the middle, and this is the abode of Krishna. And then the petals. And then Jiva Goswami writes in his commentary, where the petals intersect, those are pathways where the gopis and Radharani perform their activities and go to perform activities with Krishna. And then the petals have a circle around them. And there's another mantra, for those of you that are Brahman-initiated, it's our last of our Gayatri mantras, called Kama Gayatri. And then that's the abode of Krishna. Krishna and his immediate associates. You know, Nanda Maharaj and everybody that's in Krishna's pastimes. And then there's an area outside that, kind of like the suburbs. Oh, he doesn't use the word suburbs. It says Swetadweep. And Swetadweep is the abode of many things, but it Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha in the four sides of a quadrangle. So inside is a hexagon, and at the outside is a four-sided figure. And there's all kinds of things along, you know, in other words, Mathura and Dwarka are also in the spiritual world, Goloka. Are you with me? There's the spiritual world, and Krishna's there. But Krishna's also in Dwarka and Mathura. I remember as a new devotee learning that Goloka has three parts, three divisions. Much like, or just like, Krishna's pastimes here. Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. So it's the counterpart, or facsimile. That's a language, the very term that Bhaktisiddhanta uses. Even before there were fax machines, he used the term, a facsimile. He was way ahead of his time. A facsimile, so as above, so below, you've heard that one before. It's a replica. It's, you know, looks small, but it's, everything is there. Just like inside Krishna's mouth is everything. Inside that little tract of land called Vrindavan, everything is there. Although the spiritual Goloka is unlimitedly big. But there's simultaneously Anor Aniyangsam Anusmaradyaha. Krishna is smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest simultaneously. He doesn't like vacillate and go back and forth between big and small and big and small. He's simultaneously both. So outside of this lotus with its corolla and the petals, tens of thousands of petals, the abodes of the gopis, there's Mathur and Dwarka, and where there's Vasudev, Krishna, and Sankarsana, as Krishna is Balaram is in Dwarka, and Pradyumna and Aniruddha in Dwarka. And these are the prototypes, or like, you know, the originals from which any other form may come. Anyway. But Balaram is eternally. We say Balaram is the first expansion of Krishna. But it's not like once upon a time Krishna said, gee, I'm lonely, I want a brother. And boom, then he expanded as Balaram. Then he had a brother. And then he thought, gee, I'd like some living entities. And boom, there's some living entities. Not like that. So the basis of Krishna as the pratishtha for everything is, as he is eternal, his expansions are co-eternal. They're as eternal as he is, but at the same time, he's the source of them. He's the energetic source, and everything else is either his energy or his expansions. And Balaram is non-different than Krishna. Very, very special position. He's not... Very special position. And there's like technical language you can find in Chaitanya Charitamrita that describes that particular category. He's non-different than Krishna, except for his complexion is white like milk. And there's one other difference besides that, the color, complexion. I mean, his dhoti is also blue instead of yellow. His mood, or his bhav, his desire is to serve. Balaram loves to serve. In fact, Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that the living entity's desire to serve, our constitutional identity as servants of Krishna, is derived from Balaram's mood of service. Balaram loves to serve. And living entities in their healthy condition, they also love to serve. But there's different rasas for the living entities. And Balaram also, simultaneously, Balaram serves in all of the five rasas. We'll come to that in a moment. So let's see what happens. Here's what a little quote from Krishna book. Prabhupada writes, one cannot attain the supreme platform of self-realization without being sufficiently favored by Balaram. Bala does not mean physical strength. One must have the spiritual strength which is infused by Balaram or Sankarsana. So Balaram is, or Sankarsana, is the source of all spiritual power. In order to carry out instructions, you've heard this before, within an instruction given by the spiritual master is the capacity to carry out the instruction. Or within the instruction of Krishna is the capacity to carry out the instruction. I'll give an example. Krishna says, from whatever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one should bring the mind back under the control of the self. He says that, right? So try it. What happens? The mind doesn't want to cooperate. So how are you going to do it when the mind doesn't want to? It's conditioned to just go all over the place. Like a monkey. How do you control a monkey? Within the instruction that Krishna gives is the capacity to carry out the instruction. What is that strength? It's Balaram. He is that. At least he's the source of all spiritual strength. And he gives the instruction. Whoa. That's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He is the original spiritual master. Meaning, all spiritual masters are deriving their capacity or power or whatever to perform that function from Balaram. And so the instructions come from him, and the power to carry out the instructions come from him. And someone is simply serving him, as he is serving Krishna. He's mercifully connecting us to Krishna through instructions and the strength to carry out the instruction. So we're dependent upon him. But he's a nice person to be dependent upon. When we sometimes you see images of the Dasavatar, forms of the Lord. And sometimes the artists, at least my experience is, they're not really so good. I mean, it's hard to tell who's who, but then you can tell who's who by what they're carrying in their hands. That's Krishna. And that's Ram. And that's Parashuram. And carrying the plow is Balaram. So his name of carrying the plow, do you know the name of Balaram when he carries the plow? Haladhara. Hala, Dhara. Dhara means to hold. Like Giri Dhari. Krishna's lifting the hill of Govardhan. Or Chakra Dhari, the name of Lord Vishnu. He's holding the chakra. Hala is the plow. In Bhagavad Gita, we find the statement of what the occupations of a Vaishya are. Krishna appeared in the family of Vaishyas. Not because he's a Vaishya. He's the Supreme Lord. But he likes cows. So he appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj, and he herds cows. Gopal, he gives protection to the cows. Govinda, he gives pleasure to the cows. So he carries the flute, and with his flute he calls the cows. But not just cows, he calls all the living entities. And Balaram carries the plow, because another Vaishya occupation is agriculture. Krishi, Gauraksha, Vanijam, and so mercantile. The products of the land and the cow can be taken to the marketplace, and that's another function of the Vaishyas. Krishi, Gauraksha, Vanijam, Vaishya Karma, Svabhavijam. So Balaram is carrying the plow for tilling the field, but it's not an ordinary plow, as you'll see when we get there. And this nice instrument for carrying the plow across the shoulder of the bullock. And that's Balaram, along with his good brother Krishna. We have our Nisringa prayers where we sing one of these songs of the Dasavatars. So, whoops, what happened? Oh, I see what happened. There's one written also for Balaram because he's one of the Dasavatars. And the translation reads, O Keshava, O Lord of the universe, O Lord Hari, who have assumed the form of Balaram, the wielder of the plow, all glories to you on your brilliant white body. You wear garments the color of a fresh blue rain cloud. These garments are colored like the beautiful dark hue of the river Jamuna, who feels great fear due to the striking of your plowshare. We're going to see some images of that just a little bit. The powerful plow of Balaram was used in an incident that took place between the Yadu dynasty and the Kuru dynasty. There was a plan, this is before the Kurukshetra battle, there was a plan for the daughter of Duryodhana to have her swayamvar, and her name was Lakshmana. So Samba, one of Krishna's sons, wished to take part in the swayamvar, and when he went there, he did something similar to what Arjuna did with Krishna did with Draupadi. He kidnapped Lakshmana and riding in his chariot went running and fighting the ensuing army chasing after him. Only it played out a little differently. Krishna defeated all of the soldiers. Samba was a great hero, but he was surrounded by many, many, many generals, much like the Abhimanyu battle that took place. And he was captured. Samba was captured and taken back to the palace in Hastinapur. And bad news travels fast. Word got to Dwarka. Samba's been put in Duryodhana's prison. And Ugrasena was enraged. This is an insult to the Yadu dynasty. Assemble our entire army, and our entire army will go and crush the Kauravas. And all this chivalrous talk was taking place in Dwarka. We've been insulted, and we have to liberate Samba. But one of the qualities, there's a number of incidences which illustrate, one of the qualities of Balaram is he likes to be a go-between, like a mediator of a problem. So he volunteered, no, not yet. I have this relationship with Duryodhana, and I think if I go just myself with some soldiers, I can make a peaceful settlement. So Ugrasena agreed. So all the way from Dwarka to Hastinapur with some soldiers, and they made a camp outside the city of Hastinapur, and a messenger was sent in to Duryodhana. Balaram has arrived. Now Balaram is his teacher in fighting with a club and other similar skills. So he was honored. Balaram has come. So he sent messengers back with very expensive gifts and greetings and honoring Lord Balaram. And the question was raised, please tell our king, what is it that has brought you here? What is the good fortune that has brought you here to visit Hastinapur? And Balaram said, I want Samba released, and Samba should marry Lakshmana. And the gate closed. This is an insult. You come to asking like this. And so they shut the gate and prepared for battle. Balaram became very angry, transcendentally angry. And you know the story, with his plow, he began dragging the entire city of Hastinapur with all of its buildings and parks and people and everything. into the Ganges, just like drown it and finish it off. And as the city was being dragged by the plow of Balaram, they realized, uh-oh, we made a big mistake. We didn't honor what Balaram's request. Some messengers immediately came and said, stop, we didn't understand how to properly receive you. Samba can marry Lakshmana. We'll make the arrangements. So the marriage took place right in Hastinapur, and Balaram with Samba and Lakshmana went back to Dwaraka. So if you're going to be a mediator, it sometimes helps to have Balaram on your side. Just in case the other side doesn't want to cooperate. These are the deities of Krishna Balaram, not in Vrindavan, but in France. Krishna Balaram are very famous deities, where just as in their Leela, they're enjoying pastimes together, and in their Leela, they're little cowherd boys, at least in Vrindavan, little cowherd boys simply enjoying day and night the association of the cows, one another, and great happiness. This is the slide that's presenting the fact that Balaram serves Krishna and all the rasas, including even the conjugal rasa. So in the neutral rasa, it's described in Sri Brahma Samhita and elsewhere that he manifests the whole Dham. He manifests the forms within the Dham. He manifests all the paraphernalia. He's not different than Krishna's shoes or Krishna's umbrella or Krishna's Brahman thread. Have you noticed on the fiberglass mridangas, they call it a Balaram mridanga? Mridangas are also Balaram. Here's a little Prabhupada story. When Prabhupada first came to America, as you know, he had just his books, little kartals, and Radhakrishna deities. So with his kartals, he played and just used whatever drums there were. And the drums in the West at that time, commonly, at least the audience he was interacting with, was bongo drums. So one devotee was going back to India and he asked them to get a mridanga. They didn't know what a mridanga was, so he described. And then he was in Los Angeles when the drum arrived. I heard this from the devotees. He lit up when the drum came in and immediately paid his obeisances to the drum and took off his uttariya, his upper garment, and wrapped the mridanga with his garment and explained, this is Balaram. And he wanted the devotees to understand and to have proper regard and respect for the paraphernalia that's used in Krishna's service that's expanded by Balaram and therefore is Balaram. So in the mood of Dasya and Sakya, Balaram serves Krishna and he serves as his dear friend and brother. Because he's the elder brother, there are times when he serves in the parental affection, just caring and giving protection to Krishna. And as the expansion of Ananga Manjari, the younger sister of Radharani, Balaram assists in Krishna's pastimes very intimately. This is a photo of the deities of Radha Gopinath at Radha Kund, and this is Ananga Manjari on the right side of Gopinath. As Radha is on this side. Now, there are temples in Vrindavan where it's even intimately reversed. Ananga Manjari is on this side and Radharani is on this side. Very, very confidential. And she, Ananga Manjari, is an expansion of Balaram. He loves serving Krishna. He serves him in intimate ways. He serves him in his pastimes. he serves him in helping to establish the principles of Dharma. Just as when Lord Brahma came to the shore of the milk ocean, you can tell it's a milk ocean because you can see the fish inside, with Mother Earth and all the demigods, Mother Earth in the form of a cow, offering prayers to Lord Vishnu, and there's Rama Devi requesting Lord Vishnu to come to the earthly realm and relieve Mother Earth of the burden. So along with him came Anantashesh, but when he came as Krishna and Balaram. This is the birth ceremony of Krishna, but by his side over here is Balaram. Of course, this shows Balaram standing up. I don't know if that was correct. But anyway, he's just crawling. At least his birth ceremony. But, you know, an annual Abhishek, maybe when he was a few years old, that's okay. There's a nice painting where Mother Jasoda is bathing Krishna this way. The gopis are pouring water, and Balaram is supervising, making sure they're doing it right. Here's the name-giving ceremony, or a painting of that, in a cow shed, suitable place, because Gargamuni, being requested by Nanda Maharaj to perform the ceremony, considered very wisely. Kamsa is very smart, and Kamsa is very cruel. He'll put two and two together very quickly. If I, the astrologer of the Yadu dynasty, am engaged in a name-giving ceremony for these two children, he'll understand they're part of the Yadu dynasty. That's the one who's prophesied to kill me, and so he'll try to kill me if he knows of the ceremony, so I'll just do it in a quiet place. So he went to a cow shed. Krishna was very happy to have his name-giving ceremony performed in that setting. And I'd like to read the verses, but they don't have the book. I didn't think in advance. But I'll just... But he says, he speaks in enigmatic words, meaning like concealed. He doesn't want Nanda and Jasoda, and there's also Rohini, to have their devotion disturbed. Their devotion was not to see Krishna as God. Their devotion was, this is their beloved child. So there's like five or six lines that he speaks in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, where he says, this child of yours in previous ages was of different colors. This child of yours will have such great power, he will be as strong as and as powerful as Lord Narayan. This discussion takes place after the Govardhan Leela, where the residents of Vrindavan are trying to figure out, wait a minute, who's this little boy that just lifted this hill for 7 days? He's not ordinary. Who is he? So they were conversing like that, and they invited Nanda Maharaj, please disclose. So he called the village elder assembly and was instructing them. Gargamuni told me something very confidential. At the time I couldn't understand it, but now I can understand it. But he didn't fully understand. It's described in Nectar Devotion that Nanda and Jasoda considered it was the strength of their Vishnu Bhakti. They were worshippers of Lord Vishnu, that he is protecting them. He is protecting their child Krishna and giving their child special strength even in the course of danger. Because of our devotion to Lord Vishnu, Vishnu is empowering our child, Krishna, children, Krishna and Balaram. And as they began growing as small children, some very beautiful artwork, they had, you know, when you see little children like this, hugging and just like being so affectionate to one another. It's so cute, and it's not heart melting. What to speak of? It's the personality of Godhead and His eternal. So they're enjoying this pastime. What to speak of other people seeing them enjoying this way? They're enjoying this pastime of acting just like little children, eating butter and dairy products and embracing one another in great affection, feeding one another nice sweetmeats from the cows, and delighting the hearts of the elder gopis, crawling like little children. And they would call them, you see parents, I see parents do this, and the child looks up and they start crawling towards the parent, and they're so happy, and they pick the child up and they're so happy. And but this is the personality of Godhead. This is the real deal. This is the original, of which what we see here or experience here is a reflection of the real. This is the real. It's described, sometimes they would expand themselves. There were so many gopis. In order to fulfill their desires, they expanded themselves into forms along with their paraphernalia so that they could each enjoy, like rasa dance, they could each enjoy dancing with Krishna. They could each enjoy their parental affection with Krishna. And the cowherd men also. In fact, all the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna was the center of their heart's attraction. And they were very playful. As they got a little older, they had this nice practice of going to where the calves were and grabbing onto the tails of the calves and pulling. The calves were startled and they start running. And as they were running, Krishna would go for a ride. And the gopis were startled, oh no, Krishna's in danger. And they'd run and Krishna's smiling and they'd rescue Krishna and he'd go away and then he'd come back again and grab the tail of the calf again and do it again. Enjoying his pastimes. Sometimes he and Balaram would pull on the jewelry of Mother Yashoda and tease her and laugh. And this is the personality of Godhead conducting these pastimes as if an ordinary child with his pure devotee mother and father and associates. Amongst the childhood pastime of Krishna, his Makhanchur Leela is one of the most loved, and you'll see so many illustrations. Artists love depicting this Leela, stealing the butter, hanging from the rafters in the storerooms of Nanda and Yashoda, and not just their storerooms, everybody's storerooms. There's Mother Yashoda watching with a little stick in her hand, watching to see what Krishna is up to. And I've never seen well-behaved monkeys like this. Please, can I have some? No. But they would enjoy feeding the monkeys the butter. And Mother Yashoda, again the same Leela, the Damodar Leela, standing on the grinding mortar, sometimes standing on each other's shoulders. Here's some more gopis coming with some more butter. Again, the gopis being fed down here, the churn, for churning the yogurt into butter. There's a really big cowherd boy. He would be the one Krishna would stand on the shoulder of while the gopis were watching, getting caught stealing the butter. Very, very old painting, again, standing on the shoulder of one of the cowherd boys and feeding the monkeys. Brahmagat is a nice place that we'll visit when we go to Vrindavan. The place where the cowherd boys accused Krishna of eating dirt. Mother Jasoda became very anxious. Here's Balaram accusing Krishna, other cowherd boys accusing Krishna, and Krishna saying, "No, I didn't eat dirt." Well, if you didn't eat dirt, let me see what's inside your mouth. You know the pastime. So this is, these are the deities at Brahmagat, and these are the paintings on either side of that altar. Another painting of the same Leela. Very, very old painting. Does somebody read what it says underneath here? There, it's not, the focus is not good enough. Can you read it? No, not clear enough. Who does? I guess it's who the people are. Here's this person. Here's that person. Of course, Krishna. Yasoda. Balaram. In addition to stealing butter and feeding the monkeys, they also like to feed the cows, because Krishna is a lover of cows. Commonly the boys in the cowherd community at the age of 5 would begin herding the calves. But according to Gopal Champu, Krishna was a little precocious. He started when he was 3.5. And when it was the time to begin their herding of the calves, they had a big festival. You know how it is. When Krishna does something, you have a big festival. So he's going to go herd the cows. Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj arranged a big festival. And everybody came, and they came to give gifts to Krishna. So some persons gave Krishna a buffalo horn to call the cows or the calves. Someone gave him a stick. Someone gave him a special thing to wear around his waist so he could keep his little dhoti on nicely as he was going through the forest. And Mother Jasoda's gift was an umbrella and shoes. And when she presented the umbrella and shoes to Krishna, in fact, it's described that the nature of the shoes were those real long ones that have the curled toe at the end, the pointy curled toe. I've seen them in Rajasthan. Only these were studded with jewels, not like, you know, glass or mylar. It was jewels. And Krishna kept his hands by his side, and he wouldn't accept the gift. He said to Mother Jasoda, "I'll accept this gift only if you make shoes for each of Nanda Maharaj's calves, and an umbrella for each one of them too." And Mother Jasoda replied, "My dear Gopal, cows don't need shoes. They already have shoes. They have hooves. They don't need shoes." And Krishna said, "I can't wear shoes if the cows don't have shoes." Indicating how he held them in the same position as himself. He wouldn't accept. Doesn't say what happened after that. Like, did she make shoes, or did he break down and say, "Okay, I'll wear shoes"? But Krishna loves cows, and the cows love him. And when it's time for herding the cows, well, we have, it's 20 minutes to before 9. I'll go quickly, just very quickly. There's a whole festival getting Krishna ready to go out and herd the cows. Every morning, there's a festival. And Mother Jasoda wants to feed Krishna, and they want to dress Krishna. It's described in Nectar Devotion. Of course, this looks like Balaram. In fact, I sense that's the intention of the artist. Whitish of color and blue dhoti and so on. But in Nectar of Devotion, it describes there's another particular cowherd boy placing ankle ornaments on Krishna's feet, while the other cowherd boys are saying, come on, hurry up, let's go. We want to go herd the cows with Krishna. But here's a jewel box, and his buffalo horn, and his garland, and all kinds of ornaments. And Mother Yasoda just wants to decorate Krishna very nicely, another nice painting, different scenes at different times to assist Krishna getting ready. Grand festival, getting, he's got to get all dressed up to go herd the cows, right? A close up. Cowherd boys assisting. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it describes sometimes in the evening that gopis would assist Krishna after bathing him to again dress him in the evening. There's Balaram waiting. And when all of that routine was over, there they go, leaving Vrindavan, or leaving Nanda Maharaj's palace to go herd the cows. And for the whole day, they're herding the cows together. One of the verses, I'm sure you've heard this verse if you've listened to Prabhupada's recording, Krita Punya Punja. He will refer to that verse again and again, where Shukadeva Goswami is describing what we're describing here through pictures, and how the cowherd boys were with Krishna all day and enjoying all day long. And then he lapses into this mood saying, who can say, who can estimate how many pious activities these cowherd boys have performed in order to be with Krishna all day long? Krita, Punya, Punja. And at the age of Poganda, he took charge of the calves, and there were a lot of calves. The cows are given, the number is given as 9 lakhs. It doesn't say how many calves, but a lot of calves, and a lot of cowherd boys, and simply enjoying. And as you see, not only the cowherd boys, but all the forest animals would take part in this grand festival of Krishna going off to the forest to herd the calves with the cowherd boys. Prabhupada once said, actually they didn't herd the calf, they just played. And because it was Krishna and Balaram, the cows wanted to be wherever Krishna and Balaram were, so they just followed them along. And their whole day was sporting activities, as little boys are inclined to do. Those that have boys know what I'm talking about. And Krishna was the leader. And there's some verses where it's described as they were entering into the forest, Krishna saw the trees and saw the whole scene. And he began describing to Balaram how beautiful was the scene. The birds and the animals all in joining together with Krishna and Balaram. And in the panorama, Krishna speaking to Balaram about the way in which the trees were actually sages. And honoring him. I think the verses are coming up. It's described in Nectar of Devotion that Krishna knew all the languages of all the species of life. He could talk to the birds and they could talk to him. The peacocks and the deer and the cows and the swans and the other types of birds and other types of forest animals all enjoying with Krishna's presence. So here's Krishna speaking to Balaram. Oh, greatest of lords, just see how these trees are bowing their heads at your lotus feet, which are worshipable by the immortal demigods. The trees are offering you their fruits and flowers to eradicate the dark ignorance that has caused their birth as trees. Oh, original personality, these bees must all be great sages, and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. Though you have disguised yourself within the forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. O worshipable one, these peacocks are dancing before you out of joy. These doe are pleasing you with affectionate glances, just as the gopis do. And the cuckoos are honoring you with Vedic prayers. All these residents of the forest are most fortunate, and their behavior toward you certainly befits their great souls, receiving another great soul at home. This earth has now become most fortunate because you have touched her grass and bushes with your feet, and her trees and creepers with your fingernails, and because you have graced her rivers, mountains, birds, and animals with your merciful glances. But above all, you have embraced the young cowherd women between your two arms, a favor hankered after by the goddess of fortune herself. There's more verses where Krishna is saying, the trees are truly great sages. They must be, because the nature of a great sage is it serves others with their life, with their words, with their wealth, with their everything, and the trees are serving others in this way, and they're offering all these things to you. So surely they're great sages, not just trees. And as the cowherd boys would play, as you can see, they would imitate the peacocks dancing, that's Krishna, and the cranes standing in the water, the birds flying in the sky, sometimes wrestling with the monkeys, sometimes running like the deer. Krishna was especially good at imitating the peacocks, and they're moving, and cowherd boys enjoying all this imitation, sometimes swinging on swings, sometimes imitating a tiger's running, and the other cowherd boys would run like deer, and all day long just playing. Sometimes they go to a well, and they lean over the well and call out bad names. Doesn't say what bad names. And then the echo would come back and they would laugh. And then another would say another bad name, and the echo would come back and they would laugh. Those who have been to Vrindavan, you've probably gone along the parikrama path that goes around Vrindavan town, and there's a well, Radharani's well. And the pilgrims don't call bad names, they call Radha's name. And then comes back, Radhe, 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 Radhe. And there's been so many Radhes been passed into that well. It's a very special well. Radharani's well, they call it. Sometimes then Balaram would have the Leela where he would become tired. So Krishna would have one of the cowherd boys keep Balaram's head on his lap, and Krishna would massage his feet. Another cowherd boy would fan Balaram with some leaves. In this way they would enjoy their pastimes together. Sometimes Krishna would take rest, and the cowherd boys would do like that with Krishna. Just all day long, enjoying. So one of these days, this is the Dhenukasura Leela. The cowherd boys told Krishna about the Talavan forest, and there were some really nice palm fruits, and they really were aromatic, and they really wanted them. But whenever they went in to gather some fruits, this huge ass demon would come charging and braying, and they ran for fear. And the cowherd boy is saying, we are really hungry, we'd like some of these tall fruits, can you do something? So Krishna said, yes, sure, let's go to the Talavan forest. So Krishna led the way. Of course, the cowherd boys are playing the whole way, as they always do. And Balaram was given the service of shaking one of the palm trees, and all the palm fruits fell, and the cowherd boys were gathering the palm fruits that fell. But hearing the palm fruits fall, Dhenukasura took his attitude. Who's in my forest taking my fruits? And he came running, charging. And Balaram stood in front of him, stepped to the side and grabbed his hind legs and started twirling him around and around and around and around and threw him to the top of the tree. And as he landed on the top of the tree, more fruits fell. And as more fruits fell and Dhenuka was killed, his friends, because there was a whole bunch of them, a whole herd of wild animals, came charging. Then Krishna got involved too, and Krishna and Balaram took each one of them and tossed them in the tops of the trees again and again. It's described in Krishna book, it looked like colored clouds in the sky decorating the tops of the trees. Here's an artist that had just smashed him into the side of the tree. Now, there's a detail about why Balaram was deputed to kill Dhenukasura. And here's the detail. In one of the Puranas, I don't recall it in Srimad Bhagavatam, but in any case, the personality of Godhead, Lord Nrsingadev, promised Prahlad, "I will never harm any of your descendants, although you're in the family of Daityas." So Prahlad had one son whose name was Virochana. Virochana had one son whose name was Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj had one son whose name was, I forget, starts with an S, Saka Sika. Something like that. And in his previous life, Sakasika was this Dhenuka. So because Krishna had given the promise that he wouldn't kill, Narada Muni explains this in the Garga Samhita, you'll see in a moment. So here's the ass demons hanging from the tops of the trees. So Sahasika was a king, the Daitya king. And he had an enjoying propensity like anything. So one time, with 10,000, according to Garga Samhita, 10,000 females, he was on the side of the Gandamanana mountain enjoying activities, and they were playing musical instruments and dancing and carrying on. And they didn't know in a nearby cave was Dravas Muni. Dravas Muni was trying to meditate, and the cinema music wasn't very pleasing to him for his meditation. So he came storming out and saw the whole scene and cursed Sahasika. "You ass-like person, you should become an ass." Here's the translation. Very thin, with a long beard, walking with wooden sandals, holding a stick, and glowing with flames of anger, Dravasa, whose curse makes the universe tremble, left his cave and spoke to Sahasika. "Fool, ass-like person, rise, become an ass, oh demon, after 400,000 years. In the transcendental circle of Mathura, in the sacred forest of Palavan, you'll attain liberation by Lord Balaram's hand." And Narada is narrating this. "Because he had given Prahlad Maharaj the benediction, your descendants will not be killed by me. Krishna reigns at Dhenuka." Was killed by Lord Balaram. There they are, Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan. And we're going to end with this. Just there's some DV photos. in different dresses at different times. Now, next one is a Chandan Yatra. No, coming up. Chandan Yatra, where the deity from head to toe is covered in Chandan. And another year, even their effulgences are covered in Chandan. Another color of Chandan. And then the small deities in Chandan. Like this. They're worshipped very, very nicely in Vrindavan. Natural flowers and when they open the curtain, the fragrance of the flowers just knocks you over. It's very strong. The more photos of or paintings of the killing of the demons, and when the killing was done, it's time for lunch. And the cowherd boys would enjoy having their lunch together, sometimes sharing the items from one another's lunch, sometimes feeding Krishna something from their lunch, sometimes putting a flower in Krishna's mouth, telling him to close his eyes, and they would laugh. And then after lunch, they would rest. And then after resting, they'd go herd the cows. Prabhupada describes like this in Krishna book. Every day, around 11:30, a demon would come. And Krishna would kill the demon. And then it was time for lunch. And then they'd resume herding the cows. And around 4:30, 5 o'clock, another demon would come. Krishna would kill the demon. And it was time to go home. Prabhupada explained, if the demons hadn't come, Krishna and the cowherd boys were having so much transcendental fun together, they may never have had lunch. Or may have never gone home. So the demons were part of the leela of lunch taking and going home. And so then they would go home, and as they were returning home, the association, or the receiving of Krishna, was another grand festival. When you read this in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's just amazing, the festival of receiving Krishna when he comes. As you can see, the one with the crown, that's Radharani, and the other gopis also, enjoying the festival of their eyes, of seeing Krishna. And Balaram, of course, is all-knowing and understanding the love of the gopis for Krishna, and Krishna's understanding the love of the gopis for him. And with sidelong glances, Krishna's filling the hearts of the gopis with complete happiness. And eventually he reaches the palace of Nanda Maharaj, and he rejoins Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. This is one of those paintings, Krishna and Balaram coming. This is from the old Krishna book painting. And a much improved version, in my opinion, is this one, an award-winning painting by Muralidhar. Oh, excuse me, by Parikshit, where all the five rasas are depicted in one painting at the same time. And the majesty of Nanda and Yashoda, the affection of Krishna for his mother and father, the cowherd boys, the cows, the birds, the gopis waiting for their offerings, and embraces, also with Rohini, the young gopis over here, just getting the glance of Krishna was their happiness. And then, after bathing, their evening meal. And sometimes Krishna would go and milk the cows in the evening time. Sometimes they would squirt the milk from the udders of the cows into the mouths of the other cowherd boys. Here's a close-up. And they would enjoy. Of course, this is one who's not a cowherd boy. You recognize him, right? Madhu Mangal. Madhu Mangal is a Brahmin friend of Krishna. Very, very intimate associate. And back here, of course, is Nanda enjoying the fun. and the cloth of Balaram, and the rope for the cows, and his plow, the stick for controlling the cows. So that's the end of the day. And tomorrow we'll have another day going out to herd the cows and more pastimes. Krishna Balaram ki jai.